Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC doesn't just measure alumni engagement scores. It uses academic research in cognitive science and positive psychology to actually increase an alum's willingness to give. Quantitative data, such as capacity, gets a prospect into your pipeline, but qualitative data, such as impact stories, gets a prospect through your pipeline. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights and automatically delivers them to major gift officers for use in cultivation. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive's training. If you're looking to align your entire team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about Responsive's four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, let's ensure that everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you prefer a virtual event, that'll work too. Let's get your team thinking critically and more carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I will also put some information in the show notes. Hi, Jeffrey. It is certainly a pleasure to have you on the Fundraising Talent Podcast with me today. We have you and I have been swapping messages. We've talked on the phone a couple of times, and we finally managed to get you on the schedule. I'm looking forward to having you as a guest to wrap up 2020. You're our last guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Christmas was last week, and we're wrapping up 2020 with Jeffrey Foster. Jeffrey, why don't you, before we dive into our conversation, how about you just introduce yourself to our listeners?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jason. I appreciate the invite. And yeah, like you said, you know, my name is Jeffrey Foster. I am a Pacific Northwest native, born at Northwest Hospital in Seattle, Washington. And yeah, it's a great city of clouds and rain. So there you go.
You're in Seattle, and I don't know that I've ever done any, I think the closest I've come to Seattle in terms of fundraising would be perhaps, which isn't very close or isn't very nearby, would perhaps be in somewhere in Northern California and perhaps in Oregon. What does fundraising look like in Seattle? I mean, you got some big companies. You guys, you know, you've certainly got Microsoft, you've got Starbucks, but everybody can't, those two companies can't drive every bit of philanthropy, can they?
Right. That's a great point, Jason. I think, you know, we got some major health foundations out here, whether that's Virginia Mason or Harborview Medical Center. We also have Evergreen Health Foundation. Those are some pretty big foundations. Obviously, you got the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. You've got now the new and approved, you know, Bezos Foundation, you know, Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon. AFP, so Association of Fundraising Professionals, we have about, I think it's 1,700 professionals, fundraising professionals, in a closed LinkedIn group here in the Pacific Northwest, just in greater Seattle. So I guess that kind of puts it into perspective.
Yeah, that is. That's I would not have guessed that your local chapter would be that large. I don't know that I wouldn't guess that. You know, I remember learning a couple of years ago that that actually Toronto, up in Canada, actually has the largest AFP chapter. Which I always thought, okay, that's interesting. And so you sort of connect the dots and begin to understand why that's the case. And I've actually recently been in conversation with some folks in the upper Midwest about their very, about their very large, apparently Kansas City has a very large AFP chapter. And that wasn't one that I would have thought that wouldn't have been one of the first ones that sort of came to mind, but it sounds like you guys have quite an impressive group as well. Jeffrey, what are we going to talk about today?
And by the way, to kind of jump back to your previous question, we have about 2,000 members of the AFP Advancement Northwest, by the way.
Wow.
It's actually grown. I think when I became a member in November of 2008 or 2008, what am I saying? In 2018, I think it was about 1700 or 1800, and now it's grown to about 300 or 400 more. So
tell us about this concept that you were sharing with me before we hit the record button.
I think it's a very simple but deep approach to the whole conversation of stewardship. I mean, the basics of it is where we're. So I guess to start things off, I got a certification in the fundamentals of fundraising through AFP in November of 2018. And I learned that about 78% of all donors don't get thanked for their gift. And when an organization thanks them, then that increases the chance of more fundraising and more gifts from that specific person and others from 78% to 96%. And so I am a huge believer in trying to create or trying to innovate and create and really use creativity and trying to use different things to thank donors and just have a gratitude mindset. So really the philosophy comes from, you know, asking for a gift and then thanking them for that gift. And then the report part of it is reporting the impact of that gift and then repeating that process. So it's an ask, thank, repeat, report, and then repeat. And then kind of flowing that in a year-end gratitude report where you would actually create something, maybe like a slideshow and to be able to go back to all those, you know, major donors and really, annual donors, mid-level donors, major donors, and really share that gratitude report with them on how that gift was impactful to the organization. Yeah. It's just something that I've learned.
Jeffrey, why do you suppose, I want to hear about that gratitude report, because that may be something that's particularly relevant here at the year end. That may be something a lot of our listeners may want to think about if they're not already doing something of that sort. But Jeffrey, going back to the statistic you heard with AFP, why is it that you think, I've got my opinions, and I remember a very, very early guest in our podcast lineup talking about sort of that hesitancy sometimes that we have, or that just completely overlooking that thank you call, perhaps. Why is it you think we're so lousy in this field, being that we're on sort of the receiving end of charitable giving? Why is it that we're just so lousy with saying thank you?
I think the reality is that I think there's a majority of gift officers out there that are really just gung-ho about getting that gift. And I think a lot of organizations and leadership puts a lot of pressure on gift officers, whether they're mid-level gift officers or major gift officers, to really get that gift and meet certain kind of gift benchmarks, maybe per week or per month, and maybe just a little too much pressure to get a specific gift from a specific person. And so I think we're, I think gift officers get caught up in not really understanding the donor per se, but it's really just, it becomes more about selling rather than actually stewarding a relationship. I think fundraising is similar to sales, but I don't think it is sales. It's I think it's got to be true teamwork, true relationship building in every aspect of the stewardship process, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And maybe that's, I think that's where I tend to think that if we thought about it deeply, about the reason why the thank you call doesn't get made, I think it's because we all sort of sign on with this job to cultivate, you know, to initiate, cultivate, and sort of solicit these gifts, right? And so we get that far. And once we've gotten that far, I think when the point at which the obligation to pick up the phone, the criticalness, the importance of picking up the phone and saying thank you, I think we come to that realization that this is, in fact, a relationship. I think some of us actually have gotten as far as actually securing the gift, and it's not really clicked inside of our heads that, oh yeah, this is really a relationship. And I think when you pick up the phone, like if I was picking up the phone and saying, Jeffrey, thank you for that $1,000 that you gave last month, I think it starts to trigger that there's actually something meaningful here going on. And I think we stall on that. What's your thoughts on that?
I couldn't agree with you more, actually. I think there's definitely some unknown triggers as well that you know, you or I are unaware of per se, of why that is. But I definitely agree. That's for sure.
Maybe part of it is also that, so you pick up that phone and you're now sort of pondering in your head, okay, I actually know this person. This person actually was responsive to what it is I was asking for. Now I need to respond in a very appropriate and timely way and say thank you. And so they're starting to process real relationship dynamics. They're starting to, the what it means to be grateful. But I think some of it too, Jeffrey, is that perhaps they're just sort of lost for words. They don't know what to say. They've learned how to tell their story, how to sell the organization, how to ask for the gift, how to, you know, essentially verbalize the proposal, you know, give us X number of dollars for this particular idea. But I think some of it is that fundraising professionals just don't know how to have a conversation that's not asking. And so therefore, is perhaps the thank you call the first place where we maybe come to that realization where we don't know how to talk to we don't know how to talk to donors in any other way other than to be asking. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really does. I think there's also an element that I've learned from some great mentors of mine that work at, you know, universities as executive directors, and great mentors of mine who've raised, you know, millions of dollars for their orgs. And they really like the concept of friend raising, and friend raising really comes into this same philosophy of ask, thank, report, and repeat, of, you know, like, how are you going to communicate and interact with a friend of yours? And I think that's what all donor or gift officers should be doing. They should be friend raising. They should be making friends first, and then at certain levels and plateaus of the relationship, they can do an ask, and then they can thank them really well and make a friend, not just a donation, not just a donor, but an actual partner. You know, we're partnering together as close friends to make an impact on whatever organization that you're a part of.
I know you do some coaching and some consulting yourself, as does our team here at Responsive. And we have not created for any of our clients, it's just not something in our toolbox, I guess you could say, this idea of a gratitude report. But I could certainly understand how that might be something that could be particularly relevant for our listeners. who are sitting here at the end of 2020 and thinking, man, this has been a really tough year, and we've had some donors really, you know, step it up and help us make it through this tough year. Jeffrey, what are you thinking that gratitude report should look like? And is it just necessarily limited? I guess my curiosity is it limited to just something you can put on paper? Is perhaps the way that it's delivered also important to you?
You know, I think the gratitude report is definitely new to me as far as a year end, you know, gratitude report strategy. That's pretty new for me. I actually got off the phone a couple weeks ago with a guy named Peter, and he's around here in the greater Seattle area. He's been part of AFP for 34 years. He's been a major gift development officer for 37 years. And, you know, that's the kind of communication that he was telling me, you know, like put together a gratitude report. We didn't dive into that super deep. But I think the presentation would, of a gratitude report, I think that would be amazing, whether that's through a video or a film or, you know, being creative with how you report, the impact of how that person's, you know, gift changed the trajectory of, or changed, you know, the impact and gave impact to the organization. I think it would be, really huge to kind of think creatively on how to deliver that gratitude report, not just, you know, on a screen or on paper, but, you know, kind of putting together an actual, like, you know, film or something like that to really share that. So
how have you seen that thank you done? Or perhaps maybe you've got some examples from your own experiences. How have you seen that at the end of what we call lane one on our three lanes at Responsive? The goal is to get to that thank you call. And so everything that we're teaching our clients is this idea that if we can sort of shift our attention away from raising money in lane one, because we make it oftentimes in my mind, overwhelm ourselves with the obligation of making money or raising money and making big margins on what I call lane one, arm's length fundraising. And if we can instead see it as an opportunity to get to that thank you call, which in my mind is this doorway into a much more meaningful relationship, which consequently leads you into the possibility of much more meaningful and significant gifts.
Exactly.
But and that has been my experience time and time again. You know, I can think of an incident with a development officer that I once employed. He's still shining very much at that particular organization, but he would tell you that the relationship with this particular gentleman started on that thank you call. You know, the gentleman gave a perhaps relatively trivial gift to begin with, you know, $500 or something, whatever. And there probably wasn't a lot of thought involved in that particular gift, but then over time, this fundraiser was able to renew it. And then it just emerged from that thank you call. The donor wasn't expecting a thank you call for $500.
You know, I'm more of a gifts guy, to be honest with you. I'm more of a, let's do something outside of an email or a phone or a phone. What did I just say? Anyway, doing something outside of an email or a phone call to show gratitude. I think that's kind of where my element is. That's what I love to do and get creative on. For me and my own donors, I just started with an organization about 9 weeks ago called Youth Dynamics, and I'm their first resource development officer. And we have 56 people on staff. We all raise our own support, with ranging from 40 to 80 personal individual supporters. I've decided to put this idea out to nonprofits of a gratitude coffee bag with the actual logo of the ministry or the nonprofit on the coffee bag, and giving that away as a thank you gift, whether you're a annual supporter, a mid-level donor, a major donor. It doesn't really matter what kind of gift you decide to give, but, or the amount. But yeah, it's literally a, a way to say thank you and to really have that gratitude mindset. And so it's back to what I was saying. Like, would you call your friend and thank him for a gift? I mean, well, of course you would, right? You'd be ecstatic about it. Man, wow. You know, Joe Smith, thank you so much for giving $500, man. Let's go grab a beer tomorrow, or, you know, go grab lunch tomorrow or something like that. I just think it's all about that friend raising, right? And making friends, right? Reading a book called Win the Relationship, Not the Deal. It's a phenomenal book. Yes, he did sales for a recruiting company, for a national recruiting firm for 24 years. But if you ask him what he does, he's like, I just make friends for a living. And I was like, wow, that's incredible. But it's a whole, you know, paradigm shift. And that gets me jazzed up. So
is there any intentionality? I have heard of organizations using, like you're talking about this bag of coffee. Is there any deliberateness on your part of having the organization hand deliver that? What's your thinking about that actually? How do we actually get that bag of coffee into their hands? Are we mailing that alternatively to a letter?
It's I definitely suggest and urge individuals to hand deliver that coffee bag with a thank you note, handwritten thank you note. You know, that's kind of the thought there in the path that I'm choosing to do. I think that also depends on how many donors you have, maybe, and you know how you want to go about that, right? I mean, different orgs have different structures, different, you know, donor levels, and you know, some organizations want to just give it away as a board, you know, a board or trustee. Like for Northwest University over here, they want to give all of their board members and board trustees a thank you gift, you know, a gratitude coffee bag thank you gift. And you know, some organizations like Youth Dynamics, the one that I'm a part of, we have, you know, we have area staff and area directors who have bought the coffee beans that it gets delivered to where they're located, and then they go out and hand deliver that to their partners with a handwritten thank you note. And so I think that can vary per organization.
So where do you, before I let you go, Jeffrey, we're about to turn the corner on 2020, which perhaps for most fundraising professionals has been a most difficult year. I can say that we've recorded many a conversations about the anxiety and the frustration and the fear and the doubt about what it means to sort of navigate the uncertainty of a year like 2020. What's your thinking about what 2021 is going to look like?
What does it look like for fundraising in general?
Yeah. What is 2021 going to look like for us fundraisers? Perhaps if we get that thank you call done really well, and having survived 2020, do you think it's going to be an up year, or you think some of this is going to carry on? What do you think?
Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, I think there's going to be a lot of uptick in the fundraising world in 2021. I think we could come to the conclusion that I'm trying to remember this quote off the top of my head, but it's kind of like just like an intense challenge in front of you, or an intense hurdle that makes for the greatest opportunity, I think. And that's the reality of it. You know, I think if people do those thank you calls, you know, in 2020, that will set them up for a huge year in 2021. Since, you know, most of the fundraising work has definitely been virtual, you know, a lot of it in the fundraising world. For me, it's actually been not a lot of virtual meetings. I've been able to get a lot of in-person meetings myself, but I think for the average fundraising professional, I think they've done a lot of, you know, conference calls and donor meetings over Zoom or Google, or, you know, just a virtual meeting. And I think really, yeah, that gratitude gift, that thank you phone call, or the gratitude report. I think if organizations are doing that here in the fourth quarter of 2020, I think it will really set them up for just a phenomenal 2021.
Jeffrey, if there is somebody who's listening to our conversation today, they know how to reach me. They know how to find me. But if they're interested in reaching out to you, how would you suggest that they do that?
Probably find me on LinkedIn. That would be great. Just Jeffrey Foster, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, and shoot me a message on there. I think that would be probably the best approach.
Totally cool, Jeffrey. It has been a pleasure to wrap up 2020 with you. I certainly wish you a happy new year. And to all our listeners, I wish you a happy new year as well. Jeffrey, if you're ever interested, you're always welcome to come back. All you've got to do is have a big idea or bold opinion about this fundraising, this messy fundraising profession that we share.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.